sometimes we're so focused on the data, on the hard segments, that we forget about the psychographics that live within those segments. See, segmentation can be so complicated. Often, it's not even worth segmenting. Yes, everyone says segment, 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 and you should, usually.
Welcome to Email Swipes, where we peek behind the scenes at the emails that catch your attention and earn their place in your swipe file. Every other week, we'll talk to an email expert about an experiment they ran, and in the following episode, we'll dive into the strategies and methods used in the email so you can inform and inspire your own email work. I'm Mickey Elbaz, the copywriter behind winning emails for 8- and 9-figure SaaS and e-commerce brands like Shopify, Four Sigmatic, and Sprout Social. And I know that hearing the background stories to these emails will help you turn pie-in-the-sky insights into plug-in play actions. Ready to make inspiration tactical? Let's go. First, a quick recap of the email we discussed last week that we'll be digging into today.
A farewell rant. Yep, we're still closing down. And that means it's time for the gloves to come off. Inhales deeply. We've written you hundreds, if not thousands, of emails over the last 5 years, and not one of them has properly expressed how much we truly appreciate your loyalty, business, and dare we say, friendship. Oh, we went there. You have been an outstanding, nay, incredible part of the Drizly journey, and we wouldn't trade it for all of King Midas's gold. In your face, King Midas, stick to tires. The memories we made together will echo throughout eternity and hopefully make for at least a full page in the yearbook that is your life. Too brutal? Too offensive? Well, send your complaints to driz.lee@fakeemailaccount.netbiz. Rant over. We love you. A farewell apology. Hey, Nikki. Now that we've had some time to think, we realize that our last email, a farewell rant, check your inbox, might have featured a bit too radical candor. So we're now writing for the final time to apologize and reiterate how much we truly will miss you. Seriously. This has been the most fulfilling email-based friendship we've ever had. Top 10, at least. Just think of all the memories we had. Are you thinking about them? Because we are. Remember that time you ordered drinks for that thing and everyone loved it? Classic you. Anyways, goodbye. It's been real. A farewell haiku. 2 weeks till we close. Get your orders in now, friends. Haikus are hard to end. Shop now. Cheers. Thanks for 12 years of love, support, and drinks. Mostly the drinks, but those other things too. Cheers, friends. I mentioned in the bonus episode last season that I did Hannah Greenstein's podcast bootcamp before launching Email Swipes. And one thing she told me that I didn't listen to was this. Record your takeaways episodes right after you record each guest session. You're already set up for recording. All the ideas are fresh. Just do it then and it'll be fun. I really like the idea, mostly the fact that I won't procrastinate the takeaways episodes until last minute. But here's the thing. I need time to process the takeaways. I want to listen again, read the transcripts, think about the ideas, let them gel. So I record my takeaways after Gly edits the main episode. I take notes as I check the edits, and only then do I record my takeaways. Why am I telling you all this? Well, because I finished the session with Jared and was like, whoa, I have a million things to say about all this. And now, sitting down to record the takeaways, I feel like I'm missing so much. I'm not sure I actually am. I just feel like that episode had so much gold that one takeaways episode just won't do it justice. We'll do the best we can. Ready? The first thing we talked about last week was humanizing the brand by bringing the people behind the brand to the fore. Like I mentioned in the episode, this is a balance. I can't tell you how many times I've seen a brand build up their employees' social presence, building them into thought leaders with big followings, and then the employees leave the company to go off and sell courses on building a social following. Okay, I'm being a little cynical. Not all of them made courses, although honestly, a number really did. Either way, I can list people off the top of my head who benefited from the resources their brand invested in making them the face of the brand, only for them to leave a year or two later. Obviously, employees shouldn't feel chained to their jobs. Obviously, brands have to work to maintain their employees, but this is the reality. Your employees might leave. I had a client once who built fake personas, full LinkedIn profiles with headshots and university educations and everything. And those fake employees were the sender names on the emails. It was the slightest bit appalling, but I understood where they were coming from. What can we do about it? It's safest if the CEO is the brand, not the VP of marketing or the PMM. But the good news with email is that you can work around this more easily than you can with social. Because social puts the person very front and center.
There are two brands I'm thinking about that the sender name is the brand name, but they're written like they're from people with sign-offs and everything. They're written like they're from a person. They're building that people behind the brand idea. But if the person leaves, it's not that apparent. If the brand has a good style guide and a good replacement, the new person will take over. The name will change, but the feeling won't. And in fact, this is what Drizly did. Not for all the emails, like Jared mentioned, but for a good phase of them, he was signing off the emails. Also, when he took over, they did a little handoff. The previous email person wrote a goodbye email. Jared wrote a hello email. It built up the team behind Drizly, but it didn't build them into the Drizly brand. Now, I know this goes against the whole sender name should be people names best practice. But first of all, it's not a best practice always. Especially with e-commerce, the brand name should most often be the sender name, not the people. Sure, you'll want to pattern interrupt from time to time. You'll want to send text-based one-to-one style emails from a person every so often. But usually, you want them from the brand. Even outside of e-commerce, this is one of those things that needs to be tested for each brand. I've had a lot of clients who got more opens with brand names than they did with team member names. So takeaway number one, build up the human side of your brand, but do it smart. And takeaway 1.1, test your sender names. Don't just trust that send from a team member best practice. Another thing we mentioned when talking about building up the brand's human side is the balance of making it about the customer versus showcasing the brand. There's another absurdist brand that gets a lot of press time that I actually really don't like. I always thought it was that they were trying too hard, that they weren't actually funny. But now, after talking to Jared on this, I've put my finger on what I don't like.
We're about to take an ad break, but I'm not just going to give you an ad that wants to sell you something. I'm going to give you an ad that, yes, will hopefully sell you something, but will also educate you on something email related. So don't go anywhere. If you want to start your own email list, I have an offer for you. Sign up to ConvertKit using the affiliate link you'll find in the show notes, and I'll give you a 30-minute consult free. Now, free consults are nice and all, but they're not exactly a reason to tie yourself to an email platform you're not in love with. So let me tell you why I think you should use ConvertKit to build your email list. ConvertKit calls themselves the only marketing platform built for creators by creators, and it's not just a cute slogan. They actually live up to this. There are countless examples of how they serve our particular niche better than anyone else, and it makes all the difference. Let me just give you one. Google just announced some new anti-spam sending requirements that threw the email world into a tizzy. And one of the recommendations to keep our emails out of spam was to verify your email sending domain. Sounds techie? Yeah, it was. It was another techie admin task that was really annoying to deal with. Most email platforms slapped up some help docs and called it a day. ConvertKit partnered with a software that did the job in the ConvertKit dashboard in a few clicks. It was so helpful and it was so proactive. They know we don't have IT teams. They know we have too many tasks on our plate. They know that tech can feel really overwhelming for a solopreneur. So they figured out a solution. That's just one tiny example. I could go on, but we've got to get back to our show. Meanwhile, if you're interested, head down to the show notes, check out the affiliate link, and earn yourself a free consult.
Their funny is all about the brand. It's just not about the customer. That's what makes it feel like they're trying too hard. It's not funny if it isn't ringing true to the customer's lives, if it's all brand-centered. And you'll see this a lot to varying degrees. When you read a piece of copy and think it's funny versus feel it's funny and actually laugh, it's usually because, well, yeah, they're trying too hard, but why does it feel like they're trying too hard? Because it's not resonating. There's too much limelight on them trying to be funny. Even if they're using customer pain points or talking to the customer, it feels like they're not really listening. Like you're having a conversation with someone who's just thinking what to respond while you're talking instead of actually listening to you. When Jared said he hired someone with a humor background, not a copy background, that he could teach copy skills but that humor skills are harder to teach, that rang really true. There's way more to humor in general, and even more so humor in marketing, than just making a good joke. There are so many subtleties, so many methods. It's not for the faint of heart, and I have so much respect for the copywriters that do it well. So takeaway number two, if you're using humor, make sure you're keeping the customer at the fore. Not only will it generally convert better, it will land better too. And check out the Rev episode with Nick Gaudio if you want to unpack some humor principles. One principle that may or may not be a real humor principle, but is now in my book, thanks to these Drizly emails, unpack the obvious. I loved how in one of the emails Jared wrote, just think of all the memories we had, and followed it with, are you thinking about them? I laughed out loud at that one. We say so many inane things that we don't really mean. He pushed it to be a reality in the reader's mind, and that's so unexpected that it's funny. Next, I love how Jared used the branding excuse whenever he wanted to push the fences. It's a great way to get around pesky things like low conversions, but he's right. Ellie Weiss wrote something really interesting in his All Things CX and Retention newsletter recently. I'll quote it for you here. Ever wondered how some brands end up bombarding your inbox like there's no tomorrow? Take Wayfair as a case study. Sign up for their emails and brace yourself. It's like opening a floodgate. An onslaught of daily emails, each one louder and more desperate than the last. It's relentless, whether you engage or not. So what's the deal? Why the spam fest? It's all about KPIs. Somewhere along the way, the teams handling lifecycle marketing got fixated on a simple equation. More emails equals more money. Under the relentless pressure of hitting those monthly targets, they keep hammering away. But here's the kicker. As the frequency cranks up, so does the rate of unsubscribes and email fatigue. Engagement plummets, but the emails don't stop. They can't. The machine has been set to maximum, and dialing it back feels like a direct hit to revenue. Could a more targeted, less frequent approach work better? Maybe, but who's brave enough to try when every drop in frequency hits the bottom line? This is the email marketer's paradox. Once you crank up the frequency, it's almost impossible to scale back without top-level intervention, and often it's those at the top who were cheering for the increase in the first place. Here's the takeaway. It's a trap. An easy one to fall into, hard to escape. Before ramping up your email cadence, consider the long game. Is the temporary spike in revenue worth the potential long-term damage to customer relationships? Because once you've turned the dial up, turning it down is a battle that few are brave enough to fight. Pretty sobering, eh? By the way, I found it really interesting that Jared moved from Wayfair to Drizly, where he had a lot more freedom to work with the customer relationship, not just the conversions. So, branding emails are important. Clearly, we can't build our strategy around branding, but they're not just fun for us to create and write. They're important for the brand and the customer experience, too. Hey, it reminds me of the Bitly episode with Devin O'Toole, Love and Links. Go listen to it if you haven't yet. Anyway, takeaway number three. Don't forget to keep developing your brand. Often, your conversion-focused emails will develop your brand just fine. In fact, they should be doing this just fine. And if they're not, you're doing something wrong. But sometimes, you get an opportunity to send something that is purely brand-oriented, like in the Bitly episode, and that's a golden opportunity. I was blown away by the mini niche hack that Jared shared right as we were wrapping up. What a gem. Sometimes we're so focused on the data, on the hard segments, that we forget about the psychographics that live within those segments. See, segmentation can be so complicated. Often, it's not even worth segmenting. Yes, everyone says segment, 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 and you should, usually. But sometimes the segments have enough overlap that it's not worth the resources of segmenting. It's just not. But this kind of thing, you're not alienating anyone. I read that Friday email. The Brody Lee reference flew over my head. I just thought it was a regular subject line, no harm done. But the Brody Lee fans, it spoke straight to them. Like Jared said, they're fans for life now. They might even be more sad that Drizly shut down than us email swipers. So all in all, really smart strategy that I can't wait to implement. And that brings us to takeaway number four, and that is to use Jared's mini niche segmentation hack. It's so genius and simple to execute. Okay, the very last thing is super actionable. Ready for it? Check out Jared's website. Yep, that's your homework. Go to jaredwritesstuff.com. Yes, that link is in the show notes. This episode is over, so you can give it your full attention. You'll thank me when you're done. It's nothing short of an experience. Thanks for geeking out with me about that email story. If you enjoyed either of these episodes, you'll probably enjoy getting my emails. Plus, you'll never miss another episode. Sign up at nikkialbus.com/subscribe. And yes, that link is in the show notes.